Sean, thanks for joining us from Long Island. Really appreciate you hopping on here. How you doing?
It's my pleasure, buddy.
We know what happened in that. Let's quickly touch on that series. By the way, we're going to have Darren Pang on. He's headed to Nashville to do the Nashville-Vancouver series, which has taken a turn with Thatcher Demko's injury, obviously. 1-1 series there. So that's coming up. Sean, you're in that series, Carolina and New York Islanders. Should be 1-1. It's not. It's 2-0 Carolina. Are the Islanders done?
I want to say that they're done. And, you know, I haven't been one of the people that sing their praises on here. We've gotten feedback about that I'm too negative. But that game last night, 2 nights ago, was, I've never seen anything like it. The final shot attempts were 110-27. The Carolina Hurricanes had more shots on goal than the New York Islanders had shot attempts. It was literally the Harlem Globetrotters for the last two periods.
But they're not done. I'm not going to say they're done. You were at practice today, right? Patrick Waugh, what was that reaction?
So look, Patrick Waugh is amazing. First of all, he's the loudest coach I've ever heard run a practice in my life. I actually had to ask if he was mad. I had to ask the guys that are there every day. I'm like, is this normal for Patrick Waugh? They were like, yeah. He was teaching, obviously concerned about the breakout because they could not get the puck out of their own end. But to me, the most interesting thing was, and it's about every series that goes 2-0, the ability of players to put stuff behind them blows me away. Because personally, when things go wrong for me, I wallow in it. I get it, and I wrap it around myself, and I feel really bad for a couple of days, beat myself up. Islanders were ready to go. Patrick Waugh was ready to go. Yesterday, he told a great story, two great stories. One about when he was playing against Quebec in 93 when Montreal won the cup. First round, Quebec, two games, lose. He lost two games the rest of the playoffs. They won the cup. And the world was ending. They got back to Montreal, and they were bums. They lost two games the rest of the playoffs, won the cup. And then the extra day off, he talked about, and it was funny because Lou's manager now, Lou Lamoriello, he talked about the cup against the Devils, and they lost game five. They got shut out in Denver, put the Devils on the cusp of winning. And there were 2 days before game six. And he said, if we had played the game the next day, we would have lost. I'm telling you, we would have lost. But we had an extra day to put it away. And we won. And then we came back and we won game seven. And that was his last cup. So I don't think they're done. That's a veteran team. That's a proud team. But I don't know that they have the tools to play against this Carolina team that's finally gotten up to speed. Game one was the way it was because Carolina hadn't played a meaningful game in a pretty long time.
Why I don't think they're done is because of everything you just said. However, the impact of losing that game is the fact that Carolina, even if the Islanders go win game three, Carolina is going to respond. And then it could be 3-1. And then they're done. Right? I mean, and that's the point of why they needed to win that game. Although you look at the series I'm covering, the New York Rangers and Washington Capitals. Listen, I mean, we're going back to DC. Game three is on Friday. And I don't see a way for the Capitals to win more than one game if they can even get that in this series. I'm seeing everything in the series that I'm covering of why the Washington Capitals were a minus 36 goal differential, why they were a 91-point team, why somebody had to win the turtle race to get that spot, and they did, and full marks to them, full credit to them. But even in a game where they were close and they mucked it up and they played the type of game they wanted to play, they couldn't win it, and it didn't even seem that close. So I will say I think the Washington Capitals are done.
I don't know that I can argue with that. The one takeaway I have from that series, and I was gobsmacked last night driving home from the airport, and when I got home to see the press conference, to see the Washington coach take Ovi to task.
Yeah, and he's right.
But nobody's ever done it.
I know.
What are we, in year 18?
Yeah, something like, yeah, year 18. And he's right, because I'm listening. I'm obviously up in the press box, you're watching, and whenever Alex Ovechkin is on the ice, your eye just goes to him because he's Alex Ovechkin, right? I mean, especially on the power play. He skated maybe 15 feet on their power play, okay, for the entire game. Like, he just dumped. He's not moving. He's not moving at all. The Rangers are doing a terrific job of closing off lanes, blocking his shot whenever he gets the opportunity, but he's shooting from outside. It's not dangerous. He's not getting into dangerous scoring areas. I don't want to say he looks disinterested. I don't want to say he is disinterested, but he looks disinterested. That's the look. He's clearly not. He's engaged, but he looks disinterested. And there needs to be something that changes here for them in game three, or it's going to be more of the same, because the Rangers are not concerned about who goes on the ice for the matchup against Ovechkin. It's not like they get a home ice advantage where they get the matchup they want for Alex Ovechkin. The Rangers down the middle have four centers who all kill penalties. They're all defensively responsible. They don't mind whoever it is going out on the ice against that top line. They're just like, okay, that's who's out there. They may have a preference, like in games one and two, they had the preference for the Vincent Trocheck line with Panarin and Lafreniere because they wanted to push and they wanted to make that line play defense, right? But if it's Barclay Goodrow's line, they're okay with it. Why? Goodrow wins faceoffs, plays strong defense. So does Jimmy Vesey, right? Matt Rempe bangs the bodies around. They're okay with whatever the matchup is, so they don't get an advantage going home.
I think disinterested is harsh. Until Carberry said something, it made me wonder if he was banged up, because he was moving this year. He wasn't in his office anymore. And that's what made the Washington power play so good after being so bad for the first half of the year. The second half of the year, he started moving, and it took the rest of the team a long time to get used to Ovechkin not being in his office anymore. And now he's back to it. Like, he's not moving. He's not circulating around the ice, trying to pick different spots. And that's what made me think perhaps he's not 100%. But I think if that was the case, I don't know that the coach would give him the gears.
Yeah. And he gave him the gears, and rightfully so. Being honest, you know, I think that's where Spencer Carberry was. He was just being honest. So that's a 2-0 series as well. Those are the two series we're covering. Again, Darren Pang is going to be joining us shortly here. He's going to talk about the Canucks and the Predators series that he's at, and more things as well, a little bit on the Panthers and being up 2-0. But listen, I mean, Sergei Bobrovsky's save, I want to leave that to Darren Pang to describe. Carter Verhaeghe's clutch play. Let's touch on that for a little bit. This guy scores another overtime goal in the playoffs. That makes five for him. You know who has more than that all time? Joe Sakic with 8 and the Rocket with 6. Okay, that's the company that Carter Verhaeghe is keeping. And you look at these Panthers and what happens? Somebody steps up all the time. And when it gets to overtime, a lot of the time it's Carter Verhaeghe. It's been impressive because they haven't blown away the Lightning, but they've just beat them. And that's what you need.
Well, they are the Lightning now. They are what the Lightning were at their peak. Like, they're just strong everywhere. They're mentally tough. They've learned their lessons. And you're right, Carter Verhaeghe's clutch, he's not even the most clutch player on their team. That's the scary part of the whole thing. It's still Matthew Tkachuk. He still rides. He still drives that train. Like, you think about last year and the overtime goals in Carolina and the statement that he made. To me, there's probably no player more clutch in the league right now than Matthew. And you know, you're singing the praises of Carter Verhaeghe and the success he's had. That just tells you how deep they are, especially when it comes to mindset now. And mindset is such a huge, huge part of the playoffs.
And we've touched on this, and we talked about it a few weeks ago. I remember when the Florida Panthers came through New York, and it was early March. And I asked Paul Maurice, they were rolling, right? And I asked Paul Maurice the question, is the only bad thing about this is that it's March 4th and not April 4th, right? The way you guys are playing. And, you know, people got to laugh about that question. And, you know, he said, no, we're a day-to-day, game-by-game team and whatnot. But then they hit a skid. Then they had a real rough patch and went through a lot of injuries. I think that's benefiting them now, right, Sean? You know, I mean, they had guys like Aaron Ekblad missed some time. That also helped him get fresher too, right? You had other injuries. Barkov missed some time. They went through some adversity. They had guys who got rested, and I think you're seeing the benefits of that. They had a strong close to the season, and they've carried that through. They turned it on at the right time.
So I don't agree. They had a chance to win the East, and if they won the East, they're playing the Washington Capitals right now. If they beat the Tampa Bay Lightning, they're going to pay a price. And when the next round comes, they're going to limp. The New York Rangers aren't going to limp.
No, you're right about that. That's fair. I'll give you that. But they did go through some adversity that they hadn't been through in a couple of months. And that is that's really what I'm talking about here, is that they had to go through that. They saw the other side of it. They came out from it. They played well down the stretch to win the division, helped by Boston losing. And they're carrying that into the playoffs. And yes, I agree with you. They're going to pay a bigger price than the New York Rangers are going to pay. to beat the Tampa Bay Lightning, and they will beat the Tampa Bay Lightning, and they're going to pay a bigger price than the Rangers are going to pay to beat Washington, and they will beat Washington. They're going to beat the Florida? Yeah.
Okay. You're going to call Coop and tell him that?
I would tell him that right now if he came on with us. John, you're more than welcome to. Do you think anybody in this league can beat the Florida Panthers 4 out of 5 times?
Yeah.
Who?
Well, Carolina can do it.
4 out of 5. Not 4 out of 7. Four out of five.
And I wouldn't put it past Tampa Bay.
Are you going to say they will?
No, but I'm also
so
not
you
going
agree
to.
With me.
No, I'm not. I don't agree with you. You said they will win.
You just said they and you just said that you won't say that the Lightning will win 4 out of 5. So but, you're saying the Panthers will win.
No, I'm saying that they're likely to win. I've seen too much playoff hockey to say they will win. Way too much playoff hockey to ever say that, even about the Capitals or the Islanders.
This goes back to the Carolina Islanders series, and the point I was making about this is that when you have an opportunity, if you lose game one and you have an opportunity to win game two, the Islanders did, the Lightning did, and you don't. You can respond, and we fully expect the Islanders and the Lightning to respond, right? I fully expect that to happen. But then the other team I expect to respond to. And now you're looking at the likelihood, the potential of a 3-1 series. And that's the problem. When you lose a game in the playoffs that's right on the stick for you to win, it's very hard to overcome that against another really good team. And that's what the Islanders are facing, and that's what the Lightning are facing. All right, let's close out the East here a little bit, Sean, before we get to Darren Pang, who we do go a lot on the West with as well anyway. Toronto and Boston. Toronto comes back, wins game two. But William Nylander, we're recording this a couple of hours now before game three. So will he play, won't he play? The answer might be already there by the time you listen. But he didn't play in games one and two. What do you think of all this William Nylander stuff, Sean?
Well, I think it's one of the problems with Toronto, right? Like, we don't know why he's not playing. We don't know if it's an injury. We don't know what it is. You would assume it's an injury. He's one of their best players. But, you know, to come out and you know, just ravage the guy, right? Like, between that and some of the players on the team, you're in a 1-1 series. Like, why not go with what it is? I just sometimes think it's such a harsh environment that it contributes to where the Maple Leafs have been for years. And I know, look, it's our business, and I understand the whole thing. Sometimes I think it goes out of its way to be like that. There's times when you have to give it to people because they're not doing what they're supposed to do. But there's times when it appears that it's being looked at as a necessity because it sells.
Just tell us why he's not playing. Right?
Tell
us why.
And they bring it upon themselves, right? Yeah. Sheldon Keefe brings it upon himself. And really quickly, before we go away to Panger, a former goalie, one quick note on the goalies. Montgomery can't win, right? He's going to do the platoon that makes you crazy. He went Swayman in game one. He went Ullmark in game two. Ullmark was fantastic. Swayman won game one. Ullmark was great in game two. Auston Matthews was Auston Matthews, who Auston Matthews needs to be. That's why they won game two. Boston had every chance to win that game. But he can't win. Everybody yelled, he's got to go platoon, because last year he didn't go platoon and they lost. So this time he goes platoon, and now everybody's like, well, why didn't you play Swayman in game two? So
I don't like to platoon in the playoffs, but that's just me. I want everybody to tell me what the injuries are and why guys aren't playing. I get why they don't, but at some point, if you're leaving your guy hanging out to dry, you got to be honest and you got to tell us what's going on, right? I mean, it's just let your fans know so they don't draw their own conclusions and start worrying about, you know, this guy's commitment level and whatever it may be, right? That's that with Nylander. I wouldn't do the alternating the goalies with the Bruins, but it's a 1-1 series. Game three is tonight. We're recording this on Wednesday. We did talk to Darren Pang, and here is that interview with Panger. Panger, thanks so much for joining us. Thanks so much for taking time out of your golf day to give us a couple of minutes as you are literally golfing right now indoors, but still, you know, it's good. It's good to be you. You're going to Nashville, even better to be you. I wish I was you going to Nashville. Thatcher Demko is out of this series right now. The Nashville Predators have it tied up. What do you think right now with the Nashville and Vancouver series?
That's a big blow, really big blow. As we all know, you never underestimate what a guy like Thatcher can do, or a Jake Ottinger in the West. I mean, these guys are supreme goaltenders, and it is. Now, what they've done during the course of the year, they've played hard as a team. They've rallied together. They've banded together. But I knew after talking to Rick Tocchet after game one, even though Vancouver won, that they were looking to do some other things a lot better. They were looking to get a forecheck going a little bit better. They're looking to be a little heavier in the offensive zone. And then, you know, the one thing that everybody talks about with Nashville fellas is that they are the hardest check the puck back team in the NHL. I mean, if I can take a term from Ken Hitchcock, and that's all he talked about was checking pucks back. Until you see it over and over, you see the same type of teams and their habits, good habits, then you understand what a guy like Hitch was talking about, you know, during the time that he was coaching while I was a broadcaster. And so that's the hardest part for any team. I mean, you think you've got the puck, you're not going to have the puck. You think you got a 50-50 battle because your stick's going to be strong. It's not going to be as strong as Nashville's. That's the way they play. And I know that this is going to be a heck of a series with or without Thatcher Demko. But I would say without Thatcher Demko, that this is now leaning more towards the Nashville Predators, especially after getting a game 2 win in Vancouver.
And regardless of their goalie, they have to score. And it's against UC Saros, who might be one of the better big game goalies in the league. And for the last month, Vancouver hasn't really shown an ability to score like they did earlier in the year.
Well, you know what, Sean? You need your big boys to show up at times. And I know a lot's been said about Elias Pettersson, but he has the puck on his tape last night. It's an empty netter. Clearly, you can see which guys have confidence, Philip Forsberg, and maybe which guys don't have confidence right now, and that would be Pettersson. And he's been like that. And it's been a while now that I've seen his A game or his B-plus game. So, yes, it's necessary for guys like that to be finishers, especially against UC. The thing about Saros is, and I love him because he's the little guy, and I love him because all general managers say they won't draft a guy that's under 6'2". Oh, yeah? You wouldn't take UC Saros? I bet you will. But he never gives up, and he made that right pad save. I believe it was the top of the right pad. You know, just when you think you got him beat, just when you think you've got him a loose puck in the crease, he shows some of the great tendencies of Pekka Rinne, who he mentored under. Like, one thing, whenever there was a game going and I looked at Pekka Rinne, I said, the other team better be able to find a puck before he does in the crease. And that aggressiveness and that competitiveness, you either have it or you don't. Some goalies are passive around their crease and some guys are aggressive. And I love the way UC Saros is, and he never quits on a play. And Vancouver's finding that out now.
And he's the guy that gives the Predators that belief, right? I mean, they've got a number of good players that play in front of him, but Saros gives them that belief. Demko does that for Vancouver. To not have him in, does that take away the belief, some of the belief that the Canucks want to have, need to have?
Well, we would say that on the outside. They wouldn't say that on the inside, you know, Dan. And that's a sign of a good team, and that's a sign of a team. And, you know, I know Rick Tocchet and, you know, and Adam Foote and their staff. And there's one thing to know these guys and know about their character, but it's another thing to know what's said inside that room. And I do believe that there are certain coaches that can utterly sell that belief to the next guy, uncompromising, if that makes sense. So we're thinking, yes, there's no belief. They're going to fall apart. They don't have Thatcher Demko in the net. But I believe they're going to rally around him because Smith is such a good person and such a hard worker. And, you know, we've seen a lot of these secondary goalies in the NHL that, you know, they find this spirit and they can win their players over. We saw it with Chucky Sideburns Lindgren. We've seen that with even Ingram earlier in the year with a team like Arizona. I've seen it with Decord in Seattle. So it's not like it's not out of the realm of possibility that Casey DeSmith can take this team. Or if they go in another direction, they also got another goaltender that they just called up. But again, all I'm saying is I don't think there's any weakness in that room in terms of, hey, we're going to fall apart because our number one goalie's not there. I don't believe that. I think it'll be more of a rallying cry and that we got to play harder for him.
Well, Darren, first of all, whenever I think of UC Saros, I think of you. Very similar
goaltender. I wish I was that tall.
But you're that good, though.
Well, thank you for that, because I somebody asked me a little while ago, they looked at me, and I'm not sure if it was a former player, and they said, man, you must have been really fast. And I said, well, if I wasn't, I wouldn't have made it to that league, that's for sure. You know, being a smaller goaltender or a smaller forward or a smaller defenseman, there's things that you have to have that the other guys don't have. I mean, UC Saros has, when you're at the next game and you're watching Nashville, go to ice level or go to the practice and get close to the ice or as close as you can and listen to his skate blades. Listen to his edge work. Listen to how quickly he can go from post to post. He has got incredible power and explosiveness. And so there are a lot of big goalies in the league. They can't do that. And that's what he makes up for. He makes up for hockey sense that they might not have. He makes up for concentration, alertness, high-end reflexes. So, yeah, there's a lot of things that he has that I'm not saying that I had all of that and a bag of chips, but I certainly would have had to have a lot of that just in order to play in this league.
So he's basically the Nathan MacKinnon of goaltenders. Because I go to practice to watch or to listen to Nathan MacKinnon skate. It sounds like he's going to break the ice. And that's kind of a segue into that series. I don't know if I expected it to be where it is right now with Connor Hellebuyck giving up 10 goals. Gorgiev given up 6-7 in game one, and for Colorado to be able to walk out with a split.
All good questions. You know, because Connor Hellebuyck, for me, consistently was the best goalie in the NHL this year. I think it tells you an awful lot about Colorado more than it does about Hellebuyck. Like, you know, I'm just going to go back and remember certain teams that I played against. I mean, some of them, you know, were plotters. They stayed in straight lines. You knew that if a player had the puck on the right wing, he was probably going to shoot the puck. Or a centerman that could distribute, well, he was probably not going to shoot, and he was going to pass it off to one of his wingers. What I'm saying to you is, then there was the Edmonton Oilers when I played. You know, then all of a sudden there was a drop pass and a lane change and a one-timer from a strong side. And you're like, whoa, does that back you up off the line? And Connor Hellebuyck's not the first goalie that's been backed off his, you know, the top of the crease. And he is backed off right now because you lose a little bit of trust. You lose a little bit of, is that back door, is it open? If I challenge MacKinnon, is Rantanen going to be off to the, you know, to the opposite post? If I cheat on so-and-so, is he going to be there? If I look at this guy, is Makar going to be there? So you can kind of get what I'm saying is that you explain all these things. And as a goaltender, it's hard to find your foundation again, and which is the top of the crease and in the middle of the net. But eventually you lose your posts, you lose your angles, you lose your trust when you're playing a team like Colorado. I mean, I guess Edmonton would be the same type of team in the West, where you mentioned the skate blades of MacKinnon, or it's his stick blade because he kind of chops pucks a lot. So all you hear is chop, 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 and then his skate blade's turning over, and then all of a sudden here comes Cale Makar. So that's what makes it difficult. I would have to think that going in, this is just me, but going into Colorado is not going to be any easier. It hasn't been for any goalies, you know.
Yeah.
So that's going to be the big challenge, is finding your groove. When there's altitude issues, when there's last change, ozone starts from MacKinnon's line. Yeah, I think Winnipeg's got their hands full now.
So, and that's what I was going to ask you. I mean, the way Colorado comes and wins game two, and Alexander Georgiev comes back after, I mean, a brutal game one, 7 goals on 23 shots, right?
Yep.
He makes 28 saves. They win 5-2. Does that put the Avalanche in control? And maybe to a higher degree and a degree of more importance, put the belief that they need back in their goalie.
Very important, Dan. You're right. He was losing oil. I mean, there's no doubt about that. His skate blades were off the tracks, and that's just the facts. And like all the great goalies somehow managed to get back on the tracks quicker than the average goalies. And, you know, like, I mean, there was nobody like Patrick Waugh and Dominic Hasek and Marty Brodeur, and the way that they would just have a bad period, have a bad game, and then bang, they're right back at it again. Well, it's hard to do. It's easy to say, but it's hard to do. So going back home, if the second game, so let's say you squeak out a game one win in Winnipeg and you're hanging on by a thread, and then you get pounded in game two, and now you're going back home, that's a scary feeling. I'm just going to tell you, boys, that's a sickening feeling in your belly in front of your home crowd, especially. But by winning the second one, yes, I think there'll be a little bit more calmness. There was a little question mark so whether or not they're going to go back to Georgiev. They did. It worked out well. And now there's maybe a little bit of a roll right there. So, but again, it can change in a heartbeat. We've seen that already in that series. All it takes is, you know, Connor Hellebuck to stand on his head and spit out wooden nickels in the first period, and bang, we're back talking about the same thing again. But we haven't talked about it yet with Connor Hellebuck, so that's what puts more of a magnifying glass on him going into game three in Denver.
Is Jared Bednar the most underrated coach in the NHL?
Most underrated hairdo for sure. No question. Love is due. Love the flow. Yes. I mean, I think when you look at the great coaches in the NHL, every single day, and you guys know what it's like when it's when you start amping up the games and you go into a national situation. And even in the first round where the coach is dealing with his local, you know, whether it's the radio and the TV, because they do the first round, radio will do it all the way through. Then you throw in two nationals. You got, you know, Winnipeg or Canada, and then you've got the USA, whether it's ESPN or TNT. He handles everybody with great respect. He answers questions. He doesn't flip anybody off that way. And I think he handles his bench extremely well. Nolan Pratt and Ray Bennett, they do a great job. He's got command of the bench. This is what I see when I'm between the benches. He's got a total command of it. He's got a great presence about him. And obviously, he's done a great job. He's got great players, but he's also been able to blend in, you know, a lot of muckers and grinders and put them in different roles and kind of patchmeal this, or what is that the right word? Patchwork piecemeal, this team a little bit while piecemeal it while there's been, you know, a lot of injuries and guys. So no, I'm a huge fan of Jared and the price he paid to get to be an NHL coach. He wasn't just handed that job. He earned that job.
All right. So let's flip it to the East, Panger. And listen, I mean, we know what the Tampa Bay Lightning have done, but we also know that they're down in the series. And even though they haven't been bad, they're down in the series. Steven Stamkos' contract is up. Are we seeing an end of an era in Tampa right now?
Boy, I hope not. I hope not, Dan. Yeah, are they you know, locked in, you know, cap wise and stuck in a situation here where I'm not there, so I'm not gonna say there's a better way to do it and handle you know, the greatest player that's ever played for the organization. But, you know, in saying all that, I think he's handled it great. I think his teammates have handled it great. And they've just gone out and done what they've done best, and that's play hockey. The era of where are they after this, they still have arguably they've got the best playmaker in the league, and he might be the Hart Trophy winner. They still have Hedman that's a horse, lacking a little depth on the back end for sure. They still have a goalie that's got lots left in them. So now, you know, you're right. Now, what do you do? You know, like there was a time I looked like at Doug Armstrong and I thought, what's he going to do? Well, he turned around and he traded for a 26-year-old Braden Schenn. And then he turned around and traded for a 27-year-old Ryan O'Reilly. I think there's always moves that you can make that can continue this on for the next 5 or 6 years, because there are players out there that are available. But so anyway, in answering this, you've got a goalie like Vasi, you've got Kucherov, and you've got Hedman. And they got to think that they'll find a way to keep Stamkos and make sure that he ends his career as a Tampa Bay Lightning, and that everybody can be, you know, happy and do it the right way. I hope so.
I only have one question about that series. Where do you put the Bob save from last night in the pantheon of great saves?
That's a great call. That's a holy jumping of all holy jumpings right there. I tell you that. Man, and if I was doing that game, I might have landed on the ice, you know. I mean, just because he's actually not the kind of goalie that comes up with these kind of saves. No offense to him. I mean, he doesn't roll around like that. I've seen him get out of position. Every goalie does. But he ended up on his stomach leaning forward, which he does a lot. His balance goes forward. But he never gave up on it and ended up doing a full-on turn with an elbow. It's Dominik Hasek-like. It's some of the saves that we saw with Rick Jeanneret calling during the heyday of the Buffalo Sabres, and the rollover play with the two-pad stack up in the air that just he has no business making that save. And I think Dominik had some method to his madness, because I saw him in Chicago when I retired. He just came here and I watched him practice and I said, how on earth does he do this? He has plans. I don't think Bobrovsky has plans. So that wasn't planned, and that's what even makes it better. So yes, it's the best save I've seen all season long, and it's by far the best save I've seen in the playoffs.
Does he know what he's doing in that moment, or is that just pure instinct? I'm going to throw something in front of the net and hope the puck hits me.
It is pure instinct for sure. It's there's a level of concentration that you have that you can somehow find where that puck is. So at one point when he was to his left, and you feel that the puck's there, or you see it with your right eye and you take a quick glance, then you say, how can I get over there? And there are some plays in the NHL that really frustrate me that goalies don't use a two-pad slide. A two-pad slide is still a very good maneuver to get from point A to point B when you're off balance. And it's a technique that the goalies don't use very often. And I think the pads have something to do with it because they're not as tight to your leg as our pads were back in our day, and nor as short. But in this sequence by Bobrovsky, you know, he has to get somehow his body over there. So how you do it? If he stayed on his belly, he'd be a dead fish, like the kind that I catch at Duck Lake in Michigan because I'm not a good fisherman. But so he had to have no chance of getting over there. So if he crawls, turns, rolls, he has a decent chance. So then you've got to say to yourself, okay, now I got to get my hands up. And it was on a great player. So now he instinctively says the puck's got to go in the air. So now you've got to elevate your hands because you've got to be thinking it's not going to go along the ice. So I'm wasting my time going there. I've got to somehow find this halfway. And that's what you do. And then you find luck. And that's what he found luck, but he had a great effort to get to luck. In my opinion, he could have easily quit on that play. And that's a good lesson for any goalie out there. I don't care how old you are. Never quit on a play because you never know what could happen. And that's what happened and end up being the best save of the playoffs.
The most amazing thing is it took you 2 minutes to describe all the different options that he had to choose. And he did it all in less than one-tenth of a second. The processing ability of goaltenders, of players, is just amazing. The one thing I wanted to ask you before I finish, and it's not about any series, it's about the playoffs. We always talk about, you know, the playoffs bring the best out in people, skill-wise, physical-wise. You're between the benches. How much do the playoffs ramp up everything else? You know, we see Maroon and Reeves in Boston jostling over the red line. The mouths are running. Players are amped up. Can you even explain the difference of being between the benches for a regular season game and a postseason game?
Yeah, there are a few games in the regular season that you get that same intensity. They're too far and few between for me. Where you really see it in the playoffs is, okay, so the left winger versus the right defenseman, the right winger versus the left defenseman. Those are the battles that you've got to watch because if you're a determined, disciplined team and you have wingers that can go through the D, then you see it every single time. There's no swing bys. There's no flybys. You have to get, as Steve Ott would like to say, you got to get a piece of skin. You've got to get a shoulder. You've got to get an elbow. You've got to get some part of that defenseman. So what I see between the benches, especially when a defenseman has control of the puck and he's trying to get the red line. Okay, Sean, so he's racing to the red line to get a good dump in. And then you see the left winger, because for two periods, I see the right D and the left winger. And then you see that left winger just coming on like a freight train and pounding them. And that's where you get the collisions. And that's where you get the battles for me. Is now, if you have a team that doesn't believe in that kind of hockey, you're probably not going to win. And so, what do I see? I see a player always trying to go through somebody between the benches. And then as far as the experience between the benches is concerned, you got to have your hands up all the time because it's maybe not the body that comes in on you, but it's the stick with one hand on your stick, especially the player that hits. He always seems to have one hand and it swings and flies by the bench and it flies by us between the benches. So I've broken a couple of watches. I've hurt a couple of wrists just because you got to get your hands up real quick. So those are the things that I look for, that battle for the red line and the intensity of the winger versus the defenseman.
Have you learned any new words?
Well, I had that Rempe fight at the end of the regular season. Again, a left winger and a right winger set up. I had two coaches behind me. There's a lot of good words that both those coaches use during then, but they're nothing that I have never heard before in my time as a broadcaster or locker room. So there's some I like to leave where they are. But there are some good ones. Like people will ask, like, what's the best one-liners or the best times? There was a playoff series in 2019. You mentioned Pat Maroon, and he was playing for the Blues, and it was that first round series against the Winnipeg Jets, and it was a great series. I mean, phenomenal series. I don't think game five, Winnipeg thought they won. Jaden Schwartz, I think, scored two goals in like 15 seconds, and it took it to game six in St. Louis. But one of the guys on Winnipeg, because I was between the benches, and one of the guys in Winnipeg said to Patrick Maroon, Hey, Fatty Patty. Hey, Fatty. Hey, Fatso. One of those things. Mm-hmm. So I've heard, Patty's told me this many times, so it's not like he didn't want it shared. And he looked at me and goes, "Did you? Hey, I hope you said that on TV for, you know, whatever." So I said, "Sure, Patty." And so they were like giving it him beef because he's a heavier guy. And he turns around, goes for a spin, looks right at Paul Maurice in their bench, and he says, "I tell you what, Mo, get yourself ready because Fatty Patty's hockey. Fatty Patty's hockey, and it's ready to roll." And it was the funniest thing, but I could tell Paul Maurice was like, "Oh no, who opened up that can of worms? Like who on this team would want to have a battle verbally with Pat Maroon? Because we're going to lose it." And so, you know, there's many of those kinds of things where you've got the personality of Patty that doesn't mind relaying what he said or how he said it. And so anyway, that was one of the good ones in the playoffs that I heard.
That is fantastic. I love hearing stuff like this. Panger, this was great. Take the 7-iron out and go back to hitting the clubs. All right.
My 7-iron from Mira. I love it. Thanks for having me. Bob, thanks for the call to get me on. And Sean and Dan, I'll see you down the road.
Love Panger, Sean. Just great stuff. Love the question on Between the Benches. He gives such great insight there. So he's a special guest. Holy jumping. What a guest Darren Pang is. All right. So we haven't touched on Vegas, right? Vegas and Dallas. Who are the Vegas Golden Knights, Sean? This team is different now. Oh, my goodness. All of a sudden, Mark Stone's back in the lineup, right? I think we expected Mark Stone to return at some point. Didn't know it would be game one. Didn't know he would score about a minute and a half into the game either. Vegas wins game one. They play game two tonight, Wednesday night. I mean, the Dallas Stars are my pick to win the Stanley Cup. And now I'm sitting here going, can they even get out of the first round? Because not only are they playing the defending Stanley Cup champions, they're playing a defending Stanley Cup champions team that we haven't seen. And they may be better than last year's team if it all comes together as quick as it needs to.
Yeah, I think they are. I think if the chemistry comes together, they're deeper than they were last year, and they're a little bit more talented. I love Mark Stone, and I don't buy into all the he's been healthy, you know, just like Kucherov and the long-term injury, cap circumvention, and all that. Guys don't agree to sit down. Nobody's agreeing to sit and wait.
Especially that guy.
And I love the way that he just embraced the whole thing, right? He scored a minute and a half in. He gets interviewed in the first intermission. He can't even hear the question. He's being booed so loud. And he's okay with it. Like, that's who he is, right? Like, and he's like, "I wasn't very good." Dude, you scored a minute and a half in to set the tone of the game. He's like, "I'm turning the puck over left and right." Like, he's just, I know he did. He's just a special, special hockey player. And he's one of those identity guys, right? He makes the Golden Knights who they are because he is so determined and so responsible.
Here's the thing that would only worry me a little bit about the Vegas Golden Knights is that you get the bump in game one, right? You get that surge and now you settle in and you're Dallas, you figure a few things out. Maybe you figure a couple of ways that you can get around that. And the bump is gone now, right? I mean, yes, it goes game to game in the playoffs, but that immediate surge of having your captain back is gone now. And we'll see if the Dallas Stars can get it back on the rails a little bit. Listen, they weren't bad. They only gave a 15 shots. Jake Ottinger's got to be better. We know that. And he's got to be the big difference maker for the Dallas Stars. At times, he wasn't this season, and they won despite him. At times, he was. Late in the season, he was terrific. So we'll see where that goes. But I do agree. I mean, like, you get the bump from the captain. You get the bump from the return. And everything comes together the way you want it to. But as the series wears on, it becomes a little harder.
Yeah, I do agree. And it's going to become harder for Mark Stone, right? The adrenaline's going to go away. The aches and pains are going to build up. You know, it's a war of attrition. And, you know, truly only the strong survive. Like, the mentally, you have to be a different human to survive the playoffs because it asks so much of you across what could be 28 games that there's a select few that can answer it. And I believe that. And I believe that is the greatest testament to anybody who wins that our championship is the mental fortitude they show in doing it. But Dallas is a lot better team if their goalie makes a couple of saves. You're right. They only gave up 15 shots. And I think he's going to be. And I think out of all the series, to me, that's the one I still think is going to hold the most drama and probably go the longest with overtimes and game seven and everything else. I think it's going to be a shame whoever loses that series for them to be out of the playoffs at this point.
Well, I mean, a potential Stanley Cup winner is going to lose in game one. That's, you know, a team that's built to win the Stanley Cup is going to lose in round one, I should say.
But they weren't if they lose in round one.
I understand, but the matchup is terrific, and that's kind of what makes it. So you have two great teams there, and if Vegas can get that chemistry going, man, look out. Listen, okay, a couple other things off the ice, at least out of the playoffs. Lindy Ruff back in Buffalo. I get it, Sean. I understand the hire. Immediately, I was like, I don't know about this, really? You know, but at the same time, I look at what he did with the New Jersey Devils, a team that had a lot of talent, but wasn't a cohesive team, wasn't a unit together. They put up a 112-point season. You know, like, he put that team together, and he did a good job with that team. Buffalo Sabres have a lot of talent, but they're not a cohesive unit. I got to think that the Buffalo Sabres are kind of hoping that they get the same bump that the Devils got with Lindy Ruff. That's the reason for the hire. It's only a 2-year deal too. That has to be it. Like, I think patience is done, and they're like, we're bringing back a guy that we know, that everybody here loves, and we're going to win with him, and it's going to be a great story. So I get it from that perspective. We'll see if it works.
So you think that the Buffalo Sabres think they can win the Cup in the next 2 years?
I mean, I think that they want to believe that they can. I don't believe that they can.
I don't think anybody believes that they can. And so if that's what you're doing, like, why not just go hire somebody else? So you're going to bring this guy in to turn it around. You're going to get that bump of getting into the playoffs if he gets you there. And then you're going to start over again. You're going to go to another coach. What would that be, 7 and 14 years? Not a real good plan to me. Hire the guy now. Hire the guy now that you want to marry for 5-6 years.
Who's the guy?
I don't know, but I don't think it's Lindy Ruff. And I love Lindy Ruff, but I don't see him finishing this job. I don't see him as the guy that builds them into the playoffs and then gets them through another couple of years of finding their way until they're true Stanley Cup champion potential.
I agree with that. I'm not going to argue with you on that one. I agree with that.
You know what it's like? And we're going to talk about this next. It's like hiring David Quinn when you're the New York Rangers and having him rebuild your team and then saying, you know what? Whoa, we're here. I'm going to go hire somebody else. Get out.
And then that guy lasts 2 years and he's gone. And he didn't finish the job. They got to the playoffs 2 years. They won 100 games, but he didn't finish the job. You're right. And we are going to talk about that next. David Quinn today, Wednesday, fired by the San Jose Sharks. Look, man, I feel for David Quinn. He was set up to lose in New York, but develop. He did a good job. He did. He helped Lafreniere. He helped Kako. Adam Fox. Shesterkin brought him in, right? I mean, Ryan Lindgren. Keandre Miller. These are all guys that played under David Quinn. They all got the benefit of playing under David Quinn. And then when it came time that development was over, he got fired. Look where the Rangers are now. San Jose, I mean, my goodness, he was set up to fail, right? He was absolutely set up to fail. Wins 19 games this year, and he's the one that takes the hit for it. The team's not nearly ready to be anywhere close to a playoff team. I don't know what they expected. It leads me to believe that there were some disagreements behind closed doors, with David Quinn and Mike Greer, on how maybe this thing should be run and how they do it. In many ways, too, this might be David Quinn might be breathing a little bit easier right now because it's going to be a real long haul in San Jose. And the odds of him finishing that job are going to be very slim, too. So at least maybe he gets out of it early. I don't know.
I don't know if you ever breathe easy because NHL jobs,
yeah, they're
a rarity. Yeah. The head job, there's 32 of them. And, you know, you only get so many chances at it. But I will say this. There's a lot of people now who, you know, in the last couple of weeks have been banging the drum for Carl in Denver, the collegiate champion. He'll coach the World Juniors for a second straight year. One of the great young coaches in the NHL, I mean, in college hockey. And, well, he's the next great young coach that'll come into the NHL. If I'm David Carl, I'm looking at Quinn, and I'm saying, you know what, boys? I don't know that I'm all that interested. I got everything I want in Denver. I make good money. I control the program. I have all the leash I want. Are you going to give me any of that as a first-time coach in the NHL, and you know it's a bad team, you're not getting hired by one of the best heavyweight battleship teams in the league. They're not going to do that. They're not going to entrust you with their program. So you're taking a team hoping to climb up the standings, and you're rolling the dice with them, and there's no guarantees. And Quinn did it twice. I think he did a respectable job both times, and he's got nothing to show for it except for some NHL experience and a few memories.
And you know what David Quinn has to do? David Quinn has to go take a job. Maybe it's in the AHL. Maybe it's a job as an assistant where he can get out of being the development guy. Maybe it's in the American Hockey League. You take that hit and you say, I'm going to go win there. I'm going to go win the Calder Cup. And now all of a sudden, you know, you're back in it. It's an assistant job somewhere. I mean, listen, it's a tough spot for David Quinn. He's not a young man either. He's 57 years old. So
he's young.
He's not a young man. But I like him. I think he's a good coach, and I think he did a fair job for what he was given both in New York and in San Jose, and he got a raw deal in both spots. So he is a free agent. We are not. I'm going to D.C. You're in Long Island. Lots of playoffs to do. Sean, do you think the Capitals or the Islanders win game three? Are either one of us going to see a 2-1 series, or is it going to be a 3-0 series both ways?
No, I think one of us is going to a game five. I think more than likely it's this series, and I won't be at game five because it's college move-out day for my son. But I think this is the more likely one to be a game five. I think the loss of Pesci, who got hurt in game two, is really going to hurt the Hurricanes.
Yeah, not good. Anyway, listen, lots going on the ice, off the ice. Oh, by the way, there's an NHL team in Utah as well. We'll talk about that and more next week. Enjoy the hockey.